Welcome to Loco, a weekly conversation celebrating the stories of unconventional yet phenomenal single women expats. Today, I speak with Tanya Fox, a native New Yorker turned Canadian resident. I get the scoop on all things Montreal from this local's perspective. Okay, Tanya Fox, thanks for joining me today. I really appreciate you showing up.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate having a place to show up too.
Okay, great. So we're going to get right into it. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Tanya Fox. Where are you from?
I am a third generation native New Yorker. I like to say it that way. And I currently live in Montreal, Canada.
Okay, great. And how long have you been in Montreal?
It depends on who's asking. I was here illegally for 2 years, and then I got my papers in 2008. So I've officially been here for, in June it'll be 10 years, so 9 years.
Okay, and what would you say inspired your move?
There's two things. One was, ever since I was a kid, I was wholly attracted to the French language. I told my mom when I grew up I was going to be French, and she's like, oh, you're going to move to France? I'm like, no, I'm going to be French. As if, you know, it was just a thing that one could be. And I learned the language really quickly, really easily from like 11 years old. I was fluent by the time I was a teenager, taught myself. And then I came here when I was 16. Because there was an Amtrak sale. It was like $70 round trip. And I got here. I didn't have any friends here. I didn't know where I was going to stay. I knew nothing. And I just got to the top of the hill and I was like, oh, when I grow up, I'm going to live here. And then I started coming here every year. I started making friends. And then finally I realized I wasn't going to get any more grown up than that. So I was like, all right, time to put in for the papers.
Wow. So this started at 16.
At 16, yes.
Oh, wow. Did you go to university there?
No.
Okay, great.
No, I didn't actually move here until I was much, much older, which I'm not going to tell you because that means math-ish.
And we don't do math. We don't do math on this show. I'm with you. We don't do math here. Okay, so I guess let's get into the whole legal aspect of your stay. You applied for your papers. Was that in conjunction with your business, or did you start your business after you got your papers? How did all that work?
Okay. So it was a bit of a cluster fart. So when I first came across, because of NAFTA, which hopefully it'll still be in effect, because of NAFTA, Americans have the right to live in Canada for up to 6 months on a visitor's visa. And by virtue of crossing the border, you are given a visitor's visa. Whether or not they stamp your passport is moot. The fact that you've crossed the border, that is a visitor's visa that's good for up to, or a tourist visa that's good for up to 6 months. So we have the right to do that. And based on that, I decided that I was going to take an apartment here and stay here for 6 months and figure out if that was a place that, if this really was what I wanted to do. I've been saying I wanted to move here, but I didn't know if I wanted to live here. You know, I only know New York. So, okay, I'm gonna try it out for 6 months. And when I got to the border, because I had brought a whole bunch of furnishings with me, they stopped me and turned me away. And when you get turned away at the border, they basically flag you, and it makes it seem like you tried to do something illegal, even though there's nothing on your real record. According to them, you've tried something illegal. So I wasn't allowed to come back through for a little while. So I go to the Canadian consulate in New York City, and I was like, what's up with that? I've got this right according to NAFTA, but also I have my own business, and I'm being sponsored by another business to see if they want to open a business in Canada. So all of my money is coming from the United States. I don't have to work while I'm there, but the border won't let me cross. And the Canadians were like, well, we'll write you a letter if you want, but the border has the final say. We don't have any control over them. So they wrote me the letter, and then they said, why don't you go to the Quebec consulate? At the time, we had a Quebec consulate in New York City. We don't have one anymore. And it was separate from Canada, of course. And so I go down there, I explain the situation, and the guy says, well, isn't the ultimate goal for you to live there? I was like, I don't know. He goes, well, why don't you fill out the paperwork for a permanent residence? Better that you have the option to say no than that you have to start the application when you want to say yes. Okay. And so right there and then I filled out the application for permanent residence. Actually, he filled it out. He asked me the questions and I answered them and he wrote it in.
Wow. And how long did it take for that to process? Was that difficult or did it just, was it smooth sailing?
Ordinarily speaking, it would have been smooth sailing, but I'm me. And so what happened was that in the interim, while I was waiting, I didn't want to mess up my paperwork. So I went back to New York permanently. And at the time, my former boss wanted to open another bar. And he said, do you want to go in with me? And I was like, I'll go in with you. But when my papers come, I'm out of here. And okay, fine. So I actually wound up having to stay in New York for a year so that we could flip the bar. But if that had not been the case, then honestly, it probably would have taken about 4 months from the time that I filled out the application to the time of acceptance. You get these things, the way that it works with Quebec, because it's slightly different, is you make your application to Quebec first, and Quebec has to accept you. And then you can make your application to Canada. Generally speaking, Canada doesn't say no if Quebec says yes, but Quebec could say no if Canada says yes. So I got my CSQ, which is the okay from Quebec, really quickly. I think it took like less than 90 days. And then you have to send in a new processing thing for Canada. And I sort of dragged my heels on that because I knew I was stuck in New York for a year. So ultimately, the entire process really took about 8 months when it would have, like I said, it would have taken really only about 4 or 5.
Okay. So you're all clear now, right? Everything is great with you now, right?
Legally, yeah, everything is fine. As a permanent resident, the only thing that I can't do is vote, and that's fine. I don't mind continuing to vote in the United States, given, you know, the last few elections, it's been rather important that we vote. So yeah, that's fine with me. Everything else, I have all the rights of a citizen with the exception of voting. So that's good.
Okay. So WTF. Let's talk WTF with Tanya Fox. What is with Tanya Fox?
With Tanya Fox is what they call in Quebec accompaniment, which I think is a great word for it. It's essentially mentoring, business mentoring, but in French they say it's accompaniment. So literally I walk alongside you and advise you all the way from whether it's just figuring out which idea to pursue to taking that idea all the way to market. So it could be as tiny as a 90-minute thing, or it could be as long as a 6-month thing, but I am there for you at all times so that you don't get stuck. So when you're doing it with Tanya Fox. You're not doing it by yourself.
Okay, I remember talking to you before and you were saying that one of your passions is to help women who want to move countries and find themselves locked out of the society in a way that they can't get employment and they're concerned about how they're going to sustain themselves while abroad. And you mentioned to me, you know, with great passion that your whole focus is about showing women that they can start businesses, they can employ themselves and not be beholden to waiting for someone else to employ them. Could you tell us more about that?
Exactly. Well, it sort of came from, because I already spoke French when I came here, things were really easy for me. Although as an Anglophone, as a person who speaks English as their first language, and as a foreigner, I come second to any native French-speaking Quebecer in all circumstances, including things that are exclusively in English, because the French Quebecers are in control. So I lived completely in French and I was fine with that. But what I was hearing from my English speaking friends is how hard it was for them to find jobs because either they didn't speak French or they didn't speak French at a professional level. And so you wind up with these almost like taxi driver situations where people are fully qualified to do things in their own countries. And then they come to this country or they come to this province and they're relegated to a job that they were not trained for. You know, that they spent their whole lives training and they can't even practice it here. And so, because I've had my own online businesses since 19, okay, let's just say still in the 19s.
No math, please.
Math is only good for two things, counting money and also counting money. So as I'm hearing people talk about these problems, I'm realizing that online entrepreneurship is the great equalizer. And the lingua franca of business is English. So if you live in a country where their language is not your first language and you're being locked out, then you need to create something for yourself. And as my friends start moving to other countries and they are having trouble finding employment, I'm realizing how much more of a need there is for people to know how to either practice their trade, whatever they were trained in, and move that to an online space, or to start something else and to do it in an online space. But to not be allowed to work, it takes away from your self-esteem. It takes away from your independence. I mean, even if you're not there in some sort of, you know, domestic partnership or something like that, the fact that you either have to go and ask the government for assistance, or you have to go and take a job that is, you know, soul-sucking, and not soul-sucking in the way that Americans think that, you know, any 9-to-5 is soul-sucking, but, you know, being a cleaning person when you used to be a doctor is really horrible. not to say anything against cleaning people, but that's not what you trained for. And especially coming from the United States, that's not what you went into deep, 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 deep debt for. So creating employment for ourselves is not only something that we can do, but it's something that we're ultimately going to have to do. Because also, as we get further and further into the future, fewer people are going to be working in offices anyway. So whether you're working for yourself or you're working for somebody else from home, you have to get used to working on the internet.
Right. So let's say I come to you. Do I come to you for your services when I have an idea that I just don't know how to run with? Or do I have some sort of plan before I get to you? And then you sort of, you're with me, Tanya. Tanya's with me at that point.
When you're WTF, the answer is with Tanya Fox.
Right.
No, well, it really depends on where you are. So there are people who come to me and say, I used to be a doctor, but since I was a kid, I've been knitting and I really want to start teaching other people how to knit on the internet. Okay, cool. You should totally do that. Let's do that. And then there are other people who are practicing polymaths, and they've been doing all of these different things in their lifetime. And you know, they studied law and they studied physics and they write poetry and they can also paint and all of these things. And they're like, and I have no idea what to create with all of this stuff. So those are the people for whom it takes a little bit longer, because first you have to create an umbrella under which they can continue to do all of those things. And there are very few people who work that way. We are a unique breed where our problem is that we don't have a thing. You know, so, and in the real world, so-called, this is in air quotes, in the real world, that's a problem, that you don't have a thing. On the internet, that makes you an asset.
Mm-hmm.
You see more of the picture. You see more possibility. You're not limited by a singular perspective. So whether you come to me and you're one of those lucky people who said, when I grow up, I'm going to do this thing, and that's what you want to do, okay, let's do that. Or you're one of those people who, I love all the things, and I have to figure out how to do this thing without getting bored or blocked in. Either one of those people are my people.
Okay. Sounds good. Okay, and we're going to switch gears now and talk a bit about where you currently reside. I'm not sure, you know, the whole purpose of this podcast in part is about speaking with women who've moved countries, but also whether or not they're in a place that they consider it their soul's home. Would you consider Montreal your soul's home?
Wow. I'm at a crossroads with that right now. I really did believe that when I came here. I really thought that I was going to spend the rest of my life here and that this is where I was the best possible version of me. And to a certain extent, I still believe that, that literally this experience was something that had to happen. This is sort of my eat, pray, love, if you will. One of the wonderful things about Montreal is that the cost of living compared to the United States, the cost of living and the rate of pay really are manageable. So many people don't have two jobs, whereas, you know, coming from New York, even if you had, you know, a really decent 9-to-5 job, you probably were still bartending on the weekend. So to that extent, it's a wonderful place. The people are by and large friendly. And more often than not, if they're not bilingual, they will make an effort to speak English to you if you make the effort to respect the fact that they might not. And that's an important distinction. Rather than going up to a person and saying, do you speak English? Saying, I'm sorry, I don't speak French, can you help me? Is a huge difference in the way that they'll treat you. And, you know, it's beautiful. It's like, they call it like the Paris of North America. So it is beautiful. We've got Gothic buildings. There's historical stuff. There's greenery on every street. There are parks everywhere. The food is wonderful. It really is like the best of New York and Paris without all of the stress and the incredible overhead. But shall I get into the buts?
Sure. Why not? That's what we're here for.
But as an Anglophone, as I mentioned before, you are a second-class citizen. And if you're going out there for a straight job, a traditional job, it's really important to know that you will come second to a Francophone Quebecer. After the Francophone Quebecer will come a person who is just a Francophone. Then a fully bilingual person who is willing to work almost exclusively in French but can speak English. And if you don't speak French at all, you're in a bad place. Because, yeah. Also, in order to come here, there's an exam. And either you have to pass the exam with a certain number, a certain percentage to prove that you can get by in French, or you have to enroll in classes to prove that you have the intention of learning French when you get here. But there's mm-hmm. no getting around not speaking French unless you were born here.
So the but is that you don't like feeling second class, if you will. You don't like the aspect of being other.
And it really is. That's a really good way of putting it. It is that you are the other. I'm particularly lucky because when people are like, American, I'm like, no, I'm from New York, darling. You know, the New Yorkers are the Parisians of North America. We're just like, yeah, no. We're a little island off the United States. So but yes, you are treated like an other if you're an Anglophone. The mindset here is still very much a part of their history. So they still feel very oppressed by the Anglophones in the way that they were treated when the Anglophones were in control. So there's a lot of them still getting back at the Anglophones. And you can feel that when you live here as an English speaker. You don't feel it as much when you live here as a French speaker, but you know it's true when you live here as an English speaker. So to that extent, the overt linguicism, I mean, it's racism for language. And it's pretty overt.
But wouldn't you find that in other places? Like, I'm trying to understand how that would dictate whether or not it's your soul's home.
My soul's home does not have a rule about language.
Okay.
It is not an exclusive place. And I really and truly believed when I was coming here as a tourist and when I was coming here on the weekends to visit friends, and even for the first 4 or 5 years that I lived here, because I lived here in French, I was not aware of what Anglophones go through. I really thought that they were exaggerating, they were just upset because they lost control. But yeah, I find it very difficult to live in a place where there is an overt ism of some kind. And granted, that's not to say that there isn't racism, sexism, ageism, et cetera, in the United States, but it's not as overt as it is here. I mean, there are policies in place here that keep people out of certain situations. So as I learned more of the politics, it became less and less my soul's place.
Okay. Okay. I understand. Let's get into some of the fun bits now.
Right.
Some of your favorites about where you are. You're in Montreal. We're going to go through a quick rapid fire favorites, places to say, eat breakfast or lunch.
Okay. So I'm a diner kid. I grew up in New York City, so I'm a diner kid. And so I love diners here. And for the sole purpose of just the fact that, you know, that's my spot. Diners are always my spot. Anywhere in the world, I will look for a diner. That said, there are so many things that I've been exposed to when I came here that, like, now they're my thing. So there's, in any number of restaurants, you can get what's called a bavette de boeuf, and it's flank steak. In the States, it's sort of considered a lower class thing. Here, it's, you order that or you order filet mignon. It's like that kind of an option. And I love it. And I love that you can get it pretty much anywhere. Same thing with mussels. You can get them pretty much anywhere and they're good. So I love that. I love that pretty much anywhere you go, the food is going to be of quality, even if you go to a diner type or fast food type restaurant. There really is an emphasis on not serving you something that looks like it's been there all day. So I love that. There's a bagel war between New York and Montreal. I don't know if you know about this.
No.
But yeah, so the Montrealers claim that they have the best bagels. Obviously, New Yorkers claim that we have the best bagels because we do. However, I've met people from New York who are like, yeah, I make my friends bring me down Montreal bagels because they're so good. But that is the thing. People come here and they want to try the bagels. They come here and they want to try the smoked meat. They will line up around the corner in sub-zero degree weather to eat at Schwartz's so that they can have a smoked meat sandwich, which is essentially a pastrami sandwich, but it's called smoked meat here and it's everywhere, but Schwartz's is the place you go for it. We also have an incredible international community. So there's authentic Portuguese food over here, and there's authentic Italian food over here. There's a little Italy, there's a little Portugal, there's Le Quartier Chinois, which is technically Chinatown, even though it's sort of pan-Asian town. There's this Greek area, there's a Syrian area. So really, like I said, when I said that about New York, it really is a place where you can meet people from all over the place and you can eat food from all over the place. So I like that aspect of it a lot. I've tasted a lot of things that I would never have eaten before. I will say that.
Okay. So are you a tea or a coffee girl?
Coffee, all the way.
So your favorite cafe for coffee?
There's one up by me that's called Ferlucci. And I drank my first black coffee there because I did not know I was drinking black coffee. That's how good the coffee is, that I didn't have to dilute it with milk or sugar. It's just that good. And it's run by a bunch of really, really young people. And the coffee culture here really took off. So Ferlucci is one of my favorites. And there's another one, which was my first cafe that I used to hang out at here, called Cafe Neve, which a lot of people know about, and that's down in the plateau. So those are my two.
Okay. So your favorite casual dining spot?
Wow. Again, it depends on where I am. There are so many options here. Casual dining, I'm going to say, is Casa del Popolo, which is actually also a music venue. But downstairs, they serve food. And it's all vegetarian food. But you don't even miss the meat. And I think they have the best nachos in town. Some people don't, but I think they do. They've got burritos and sandwiches and all that. So, and it's a place that you go when you've only got $20 in your pocket. You can eat really, really well and come out with a buzz as well. So,
okay. Favorite upscale dining spot?
L'Express. It's on Saint-Denis. It's been there for a really long time. It's an authentic French bistro. The waiters are like real career waiters. So you really do feel like you're getting your money's worth. The food is amazing. The service is impeccable. So L'Express on Saint-Denis and the Plateau.
Favorite dessert shop or bakery, patisserie?
Wow. There's a place called Pain des Bois, and they make what's called chiquette. It's like puff pastry with sugar, like huge sugar chunks. They look like, it looks like a kosher salt, but it's almost like a donut hole, like a munchkin, like an empty munchkin, but better.
Favorite wine or cocktail bar?
I would have to say there's a place called Papillon in Little Burgundy. And the woman who runs it has been studying wine since she was 19. So she really, really, really gets it. And you'll not find something on that menu that is not going to dazzle your taste buds.
So now we're going to dig into your private affairs. Your favorite dive bars or best drunk food places?
Well, we're going back to Casa del Popolo because a glass of wine is $4 and it comes in an oversized shot glass. So yeah, so that's my go-to place to get just drunk and eat food that may or may not wind up in my hair. And yeah, so that's my favorite place for that. There's a place called Elsie's that's legendary. And she too came here by herself from, I believe, Sweden and started a bar. And that bar is still around even though she's passed away. So Elsie's is really great. They have food as well. Actually, you have to order food. There's a strange licensing thing here. So you have to order food there in order to drink.
Okay.
One of the things that we have here that is really cool is a lot of bring your own wine restaurants. And that's a huge, huge thing. It's a very cultural thing here to have bring your own wine restaurants. So there's a really great restaurant called La Prunelle that is a really great bring your own wine restaurant.
Okay, sounds good. Your favorite places to shop, like open air markets for local designers, etc.
Wow. Okay. We don't really have that kind of thing. We don't have the open air markets. We have three times a year, we have these huge like artisans markets. And one of them is called Puce Pop, which is basically Pop Montreal's flea market, but it's for local designers. There's another one called Souk Asat. So S-O-U-K at symbol S-A-T. And that's the Society des Arts Technologiques, I think is what it's. And it's basically, it's a technological art space. But once a year, they have their own artisans market, and it's really high end, and it's really imaginative. It's really amazing. So I would say those are the two, if you're going to go for hyper local designers of any kind, whether it's clothing, furnishings, jewelry, art, those are the two for that. Puce comes around twice a year, I believe. So there's one in the spring, and there's one in like right around Christmas. And as far as local designer shops are concerned, there's La Gaillarde, which houses a lot of the local designers' stuff. We have a lot of really talented local designers. Rebel, R-E-B-E-L-L-E, is also a local designer spot. I really, really love Lustre. She's been around for as long as I've been here, and she's been making her own clothes. They're just beautiful. She was my first local buy.
Perfect. Okay. So any hidden gems you'd like to tell us about, local favorite hotspots, neighborhoods, anything hidden that you'd like to share with someone that may be visiting?
Okay. I really would suggest that anybody who wants to come here and is looking for things to do that feel local, that they follow Tourism Montreal. As a general rule, there's also something called Baron, B-A-R-O-N, that's an online magazine, and they're constantly listing gallery openings, clothing store parties. We have what's called a vernissage. So anytime anybody is launching something, whether it's artwork or clothing or something, they'll have like a cocktail party for it. And it's super cool to go to those things. You meet the designers, you meet other people who are interested in either the artwork or whatever. It's a very social thing to do here, to go to a vernissage, the way that other people might go to like a movie or whatever, we go to vernissage. So those are the things that I'm constantly just like, okay, what's coming up? I don't even know where I'm going on a Friday night sometimes. Just, okay, what's going on tonight? And you can always count on them being really good. There's the food lab, which is also housed inside of the SAT. So they bring in chefs and stuff to just basically try stuff out on you. So sometimes it's molecular gastronomy, sometimes it's old recipes from turn of the century. It depends on what the chef feels like doing. And then that's the theme. And then a certain number of people can come and eat there. So that's one of my favorite things that comes around a couple times a year. Like I said, Casa del Popolo is not the kind of place that people would come, it would not roll off the tip of somebody's tongue. And so if you want a place that is hyper local, that is the place. That's where you're going to see actual Montrealers, you know, in their all of their glory, whether it is people who grew up here or people who moved here for whatever scene or college students or tourists, everybody goes to Casa when they pass it. So that's a really cool place.
Okay, so let's roll into culture. Museums, galleries, places to visit. What are some musts?
I actually really love that we have a thriving art scene that is not galleries and museums. I mean, we do have galleries and museums. But like I said, if you go through Barron magazine, there's constantly somebody who's launching something artistic. And those are the people that we love to patronize. The people who are having an art show in the back of a cafe. We have a lot of co-op spaces. So the people who rented out one of the co-op spaces so that they could have a group show of their artwork. So these are the kinds of things that are not normally advertised, but in Barron magazine, they will be shown because that is who they cater to. They cater to exposing local people. So like I said, that's one of the things that you absolutely positively want to subscribe to if you're at all interested in Montreal life and anything cultural having to do with Montreal, including entrepreneurship.
Okay. Excuse me. Is Barron the best place to also score tickets for events?
No.
Okay.
But a lot of our events don't have tickets. It's not like that. And the vast majority of the ones that do will be on something like Eventbrite. It's fairly okay. Easy. You'll go on their website. It'll be like, do you want to buy a ticket? You click it and it's either taking you to Eventbrite or it's taking you to PayPal. It's not that kind of a thing. The only places that really have like ticket sales are like the actual, the bigger museums or the arena type thing. So the hockey or U2 comes into town and then you've got like Eventco or the big music festivals like Francophonie or things like that. Then because they have concert promoters, Jazz Fest. Jazz Fest is a must do. I don't even know how
When is Jazz Fest? When does that happen? When is Jazz Fest?
Jazz Fest is at the end of summer. Usually it's around late August, early September.
Okay, so would you say that's the best time to visit?
Yes, without a doubt. Can we talk about summer here?
We can.
Okay, summer is when I love Montreal the most. So you see how I just perked up? I love it here. The most amazing things about Montreal. Number one, wintertime. The only greatest thing about wintertime in Montreal is that the snow stays white all the time. So you don't have that dirty, slushy snow like we do in New York. It's beautiful. It's the sun is constantly shining off of the snow and it's like sparkly. It's amazing. However, if the sun is shining, that means it's extra cold outside. When it's gray, less cold. Sun, more cold. Summertime, however, every single restaurant has an outdoor cafe. So you're eating outside for, you know, 3 months out of the year. Everybody takes their outdoor cafes. You lose parking spots because they've got their outdoor cafes out there. It's fine. It is amazing. We have street festivals all throughout Montreal. So they'll close a bunch of the big avenues just so that people can, so that you can have pedestrian traffic. St. Catherine, which is one of the biggest thoroughfares, closes for the entire summer in the gay village. So there's literally no traffic down there at all. And then toward the other end, toward the west end of St. Catherine, is where there are things like Francophonie, the Jazz Fest, all of that. They actually built a space that's called the Quartier de Spectacle, the show quarter, the events quarter. And that's where Stevie Wonder played there at a live concert, and it was free. And so those things generally happen both outdoors and then inside of some of the venues that are around. And it's not too hot, because we don't actually have a too hot up here. It's like winter and not winter. So it, I mean, at best, it gets to be, I would say it sticks around 78 degrees by and large. You'll have a few days that are up in the 90s, but mostly it stays really close to 80 or 20 in Celsius, wherever you guys are listening. You can have picnics in the park. People just spend their entire time all summer figuring out how to do things outdoors. And it's amazing. It's beautiful. It's amazing.
Sounds like it. Okay, so say you have a visitor. What's a great day trip that you suggest for someone who's just touring?
One of the places is to go up the mountain. So the actual Mount Royal of Montreal. It's not only is it the base of the mountain is a sort of a cultural gathering. So on Sundays, there are the people who do the tam-tams, which are like drums. So they come there with their djembes or their tom-tom drums or whatever. And people just make drum circles. And the entire front of the park is covered for like three city blocks with people playing their drums. And then you go further up and there are people who are cycling. And then you go further up and there are people who are running. And then you go further up and there's the Lac Castor, which is a lake. And you can only access it. You can't access it by car. So you either walk up, bike up, or there's a bus that shuttles you up. And so there are a lot of people sitting around the lake. In this is in the summer. In the winter, people ice skate on that lake. And they sled down where the tam-tams are. So the mountain is always, there's always something happening on the mountain. So whether somebody came to visit me in the summer or the winter, we'd have something to do over there. It's super easy to day trip to the country. So if you wanted to go out of the city and go for a hike, it is actually a day trip. It's not a 4-hour drive. It's nice to be able to get out of the city for not a lot of time and not too much money. You can rent a car 24 hours. The entire like day trip will cost you maybe $50. And then you bring your friends so that you make them pay for it.
Thanks. Okay, thank you. Maybe I'll reconsider my visit. I kid.
I'll bring you wine if you pay for the gas.
Okay. Yeah, that's a deal. Okay, so earlier you mentioned being really mindful of the language and how people want you to understand that French is the official language. What would you say? What's a faux pas that a visitor should know and avoid?
Well, there's the ugly American thing where people just speak louder. that's a huge no-no. The official greeting is bonjour, hi. So they are giving you the opportunity to let them know that you don't speak English, that you don't speak French. And like I said, it really is important that you say to them, I'm sorry, I don't speak French, if you don't speak French, or that you make the effort if you do. They will then flip into English because they don't want to hear bad French. But if you make the effort, they will not be rude to you. And if you are polite about the fact that you don't speak French, they probably won't be rude to you. Queuing for things is big. So be prepared to wait online and to not push. It's a thing. You're going to have to do it. They're Canadians. You know, at the end of the day, the Canadians are very, very docile people. They say sorry for everything. They start their sentences with sorry. They'll step on your toe and say, you'll step on their toe and they'll say sorry. So just get accustomed to that. The driving is like New York City cab drivers. They drive like maniacs here. So be aware of that. Be really, really good and vigilant when you're watching. Oh, the cycling. So there are tons and tons of cyclists all the time. Even in the dead of winter, there'll be a storm and you'll see somebody cycling to work. And you have to watch out for them because they own the road here. So if you open your car door and you door them, you're at fault. You can actually...
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You have to drive 3 feet away from them. Regardless of how big the street is, you have to be 3 feet away from them. So if you can't pass them, you just have to wait until they're done, like horse and buggies. We have bikes all over the place and you can rent them. And here's a thing that happens in the United States that doesn't happen here. You can buy 75 rounds. The odds of you getting a drink bought for you by the bartender is nil.
Okay, good to know.
It's a big deal because you come here and you're like, you're accustomed to that in the States. You know, if you spend time in a regular bar, you'll have maybe three drinks and the bartender will throw you one, or you have four drinks and the bartender will throw you one, or they'll offer to do a shot with you or something. And that's not the culture here. There are people who do it and there are establishments that do it, but it's not the culture here. So it's an exception to the rule rather than more of the rule. The liquor is measured. So you'll see a lot of people using this computer thing in order to serve you a cocktail. They don't do free pour, and that's because the government owns the liquor. They control the liquor. So the establishment is being taxed on the amount that the bottle is supposed to yield, not on the sales. So you're paying taxes on the supposed sales rather than your actual sales.
Okay.
Here's the thing, taxes, super important. The taxes here are generally 15%, but they're actually compounded. So you have to be prepared for sticker shock for the first few things that you buy. So what'll happen is, let's just say you buy something for $100, then you get your first tax, which is 7.5%. And then you're taxed on the $100 and the 7.5%, another 7%.
Why is that?
Well, we have provincial and federal tax. So it's like city and state tax, or state and federal taxes on all purchases except for healthy food. But they allow compound taxing. It's supposedly only 14%, but you're actually paying closer to 20 or 25% on a lot of your purchases. The bigger the purchase, the bigger you notice it. Buying something for 99 cents, for example, is $1.15. It's a huge chunk that goes to the taxes, and it can cause sticker shock.
Okay, we're at the point where we'd like to know, where can listeners find and connect with you?
Well, there's my Facebook page with Tanya Fox. You can find it really simply there. It's open, and I do a daily live stream there that is both informative and inspirational, because I want you guys to do this stuff. I want everybody to have whatever business they want. And I want people to feel good about whatever it is that they're feeling or thinking at any given time, whether it's entrepreneurial or not. So I show up every day to make sure that you guys have a place to go every day and feel good about whatever it is that you're working on. And then my website is tanyafox.co. And that is where you can go to read some of my musings, book a free call with me, book a not free call with me, whatever. So basically, if you want to find me on any kind of social media, you'll find me at with Tanya Fox, tanyafox.co. On not social media, you can subscribe to my newsletter.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, thank you so much, Tanya. I really appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you, Tanya.
And blessing us with this wealth of information and enthusiasm. I love it. So thanks so much.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks for tuning in today. I hope you found this local's perspective informative and even inspiring. If so, please consider subscribing to Loco using iTunes or your favorite Android podcast player. If you have any comments or questions, or even a story you'd like to submit, please connect with us at loco.co, that's locaux.co. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.